You're listening to the Laugh Button Podcast on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Time once again for another episode of the Laugh Button Podcast right here on the Riotcast Network. I'm Mark Seaman. He's Matt Kleinschmidt. Together, we are the Laugh Button Podcast. And be sure to go to riotcast.com as well to check out all of our friends and family and additional shows that said network provides for you and for me. What's up, Matt? How you doing?
I don't know. Just your Riotcast plug is awesome.
Dude, I love Riotcast.
Those
are my boys.
And Bobby are going to love it.
Those are my boys, man.
Yeah, speaking of Bobby, we just saw Bobby.
We did. We saw him out Wednesday. In the streets of New York City along with his castmates from Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
That's how it's pronounced, right?
Yeah, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll.
On F and X.
Yes, exactly. It just premiered last week. I don't know if you've caught the new episode yet.
It's sitting nice and pretty on my DVR. In fact, I'll be watching it first thing when I get home tonight. I'm very excited. Love seeing Bobby play the drums. He's getting better and better.
Because you're a drummer.
That's right. I'm a drummer, and he's getting better and better, and he does all of his live drumming stunts, yeah. And I respect that.
He does all his own drumming stunts.
Yes, I love it when people who play musicians on shows play their instrument.
Two things about that. Yes. First of all, if you listen to the episode where he interviews the cast, he yells at me at the end of the episode. It's like, Matt, what are you hiding over there for? Because, full disclosure, we tape out of the same studio as Bobby does sometimes. And
Full disclosure.
I don't know if that's...
Secrets revealed.
I don't know if secrets are revealed.
Don't pull that curtain back too far.
I don't know. He was taping on the day that we usually tape, so we just kind of we crashed into each other, and we were just kind of up there waiting for him to wrap up. We weren't Dave Matthews Banding it, but we were just hanging out, and you know, he's like, "What are you doing over there?" I'm like, "I'm just waiting for you to end, dude. Like, I don't know what to tell you." So you hear him go like, "Matt, why are you hiding?"
Yeah, he takes a long time to sign off. I'll say that.
Yeah, like they
he did
end the
like,
show.
"Hey guys, we gotta get out of here," and then 15 more minutes pass.
That's actually a running joke on the show. It's like, yeah. It takes us a half hour to end this show, so. Yeah, so shout out to Bobby, shout out to Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. Also, second thing about that, great article in UpRocks that came out today about how television can't do music, right? Music TV shows. And it talks about in particularly three shows that are currently
Let me guess them.
Okay, what do you got?
Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll.
Correct.
Roadies.
Correct.
And the third one, it's got to be Vinyl.
It's Vinyl.
Which got canceled.
But it basically talks about how those two shows, Roadies... It leaves the writer lacking. Vinyl was a terrible train wreck. And then Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll is actually very fun.
I think it's ironic that they didn't mention MTV. Because they've been doing music wrong for 20 years.
The part of the article was like current television and how it handles music. And it actually gave some really great dap to Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll while it basically took a pee on Vinyl and send Roadies, which is kind of like whatever.
Roadies is fun, man. Did you watch it?
The whole gist of... I didn't, but the whole gist of the article is basically like, this is like, you know, this. There's no conflict. This is just people like, you know... I think they felt it was a little too feel-good. And what they liked about Sex, Drugs was they saw like the first five episodes. And one of the major differences on this year season versus last season is they brought in another writer. Mm-hmm. Who was a female writer who wrote specifically for two main female leads, Liz Gillies and
Lena Hendricks.
And like basically they really like they amplified that story this season, and that writer they gave a lot of Dennis Leary in interviews has given that writer a lot of credit for that storyline. So they're talking about how it's fun because it's a fun show and it doesn't take itself too seriously and people are goofing off about shit.
So. Well, hopefully it sticks around. Yeah. Currently in season 2. Hopefully we can get to season 10 with that show.
Yeah, man.
All right, big show.
Bobby needs a boat.
He needs a boat. He needs a boat, man. All right, the big show, big episode of the podcast. Very excited. Our special guest interview today is Scott Armstrong, and that's Scott with one T. Scott Armstrong, you might know as the man behind huge comedies such as the new movie Search Party, which finally came out, stars T.J. Miller, Thomas Middleditch, Adam Pally, J.B. Smoove. And while I was watching this movie, I was tweeting at J.B., and he reacted. So then we got into a conversation, and like every 2 minutes, I'm hitting him up with like another quote from the movie, and he's just like, yes!
J.B.'s a fan.
Yeah, he's great. Hangover Part 2, Old School Road Trip. He did the new Dice Show for Showtime.
Oh, that's a great show.
Semi-Pro, Starsky and Hutch. I mean, this guy...
So like all of the movies from like the late 90s through like current...
Yes. Okay. All the comedies that you know and love. This guy is responsible for writing those. And this movie, Search Party, which just became available on Blu-ray and was on demand for a while, is his directorial debut.
Okay.
So he also directed this thing. And he made it back in 2014, but it didn't see the light of day until now. And everybody that's in this movie is a huge star now. They're
That might be why.
Big time in comedy.
Be why. You always see that, yeah. There's always examples of like someone blows up and then like they'll put like their original show, like Katherine Heigl, that she like made one of the worst shows ever, the worst movies ever, called Zizix.
Oh yeah, totally don't know that one at all.
Yeah. She made that movie. It made like $10 in the movie theater, but then like she got big on Grey's Anatomy. Like, oh, all of a sudden she's in it.
Wait, Katherine Heigl?
Katherine Heigl.
She did another movie called
Lawrence. There's
100 Girls. You ever see 100 Girls?
No.
Katherine Heigl was in that too. That was before she blew up.
There's a million examples of people that, like, you know, or I've seen movies where it's like literally someone has blown up from like because of they're on a TV show and they're in this movie, but they're in the movie for like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and like
they're
top billing on the top of it.
So. Melissa McCarthy in the movie Go. Do you remember
she
that?
She wasn't Go. Yeah,
she plays the sister or something. Like
she played the roommate of like was it the Jay Morgan character or Scott Foley? They play two gay gentlemen in that movie.
Yeah.
And it's the roommate of one of those two.
Right.
Yeah.
And two of the characters come knocking on the door, Melissa, a young Melissa McCarthy, man. Yeah. And she crushes. She totally steals the scene. And you go back and you watch that movie, you don't remember it. Because that movie's pretty old now. 2001,
something
like that.
Yeah, I was in college when it came out.
Right. Yeah. And you go back and you watch just that scene. Just type in Melissa McCarthy, Go, into YouTube. And you're like, oh my God. She's like, of course she's huge. She's amazing. Like,
she's also Gilmore Girls, dude.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, wow. Melissa McCarthy and Gilmore
Girls. It's one of your shows, man. It's one of your shows.
No, it's not really one of my shows.
I think it's one of your shows. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, dude.
All right. Well, anyway, Scott Armstrong is joining us on the podcast. Very funny interview. He's a great dude. And he teases us with a very special project where he has to fly overseas to meet a guy about some puppets. So he's going to fill you in.
Is he bringing Avenue Q to the big screen?
I don't know what's going on, but he literally, well, you'll listen to the interview, but this guy studied under Del Close, which is crazy. Watch that documentary on CISO if you haven't yet. Yeah. Thank you, Del Close. It's a doc about the Del Close Marathon, which just came and went here in New York City.
You did a nice recap from that.
Yeah, and then he talks about all the UCB people he shared the stage with. Like his class is like every single major person that's ever come out of UCB. That's like his class.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So he'll tell you all about it. And let's get to some listener feedback, Matt. You want to take care of business here?
Yeah, we...
Facebook action?
I don't want to say we got into a debate, but we got into a conversation about... Jessica Williams left The Daily Show this week. Her last day was this past Thursday. She left. As many people know, Jessica Williams is, I want to say, other than Jordan Klepper and Lewis Black when he drops in every once in a while, the last remnants of the Jon Stewart era.
Hasan Minhaj.
Hasan Minhaj, yes. Yep. So she's one of three correspondents that were left that came over when Jon Stewart left. And she left this week. Her last day was Thursday night, and they did the send off of like, hey Jessica, you're great. Here's a clip of some of your favorites, your best work, and all that kind of stuff. And Jessica Williams, she's good for a couple reasons. One, she was the youngest correspondent ever on the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's 24 and she's leaving. 26 and she's leaving.
She was 19 when she started.
Something like
crazy
that.
Crazy like
she
that.
She was super young. She's
pulling
an
Eddie Murphy.
Maybe she was 24 when she joined the show, but she's super young.
Mm-hmm.
And she's already going off to like write another show for Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. So like, she's still in the Comedy Central ecosystem. But a lot of people are like kind of like wondering if her departure was a amicable one, which I think is very weird because like, and it's all traced back to like one freaking sentence said in an article somewhere. Someone quoted that and basically someone asked her about like how different it is with Trevor's regime and Jon Stewart's regime. And she said something like, oh, you know, I think, you know, the Jon Stewart is alive and well with a lot of people, like Samantha Bee is killing it and John Oliver's killing it and Trevor's killing it.
Right.
So that's basically the gist of her sentence. And someone like took umbrage with that because she mentions Trevor last versus the other two. And it's like almost like a shot at Jessica Williams. Oh my God, this is Jessica Williams like taking an undermining shot at Trevor Noah. And whether that's true or not, we'll never know the answer to.
Well, first of all,
but it's such a fucking weird thing to get upset about.
The first two examples work directly with Jon Stewart.
100%.
Trevor Noah did not.
Yeah.
He took, like, of course, that's the order I would have put them in.
listen, it's ridiculous. I'm just telling you what the internet, the old ultranet, got upset about this past week. But yeah. So actually, some of our some listener feedback, basically some reader feedback. Mark Siebert, and he actually commented this on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thelaughbutton. He thinks Jessica's great. Roy Wood Jr., our boy, he loves Roy Wood Jr. I love Roy too. You went to the Mets game with Roy this weekend because you're both Cubs fans.
Oh, how dare
fans.
You call it the Mets game? It's the Cubs game.
Well, listen, the Cubs need to win one of those games for it to be considered
that's true.
A Cubs game.
You got swept four
yeah,
games.
You guys got down and you.
Well, we made it on TV, man.
Yeah, you made it on TV.
MLB.
Goofing off during the rain delay.
It's great.
He basically was saying, like, you know, what do we think of Trevor Noah? Personally, he thinks John Stewart's are too big for him to fill. He knows Comedy Central tried a lot of people, but they turned it down. But the guy just doesn't make him laugh. It's weird to say. First of all, everyone's like, well, why didn't they offer John Oliver or Samantha Bee or all these people?
They were gone.
They were gone
stuff.
Already.
Yeah.
They were fucking gone already. They had inked deals with to have their own shows. Yeah. So, like, that's... That makes your argument invalid. Jessica Williams, they did reportedly go to her, and she said she's too young and not, she didn't have enough faith in herself to do the show. Which, you know what? More power to you.
Sure.
There's also rumors that they went to, like, Louis C.K.
Sure. Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer. Mm-hmm. I want to say they even went to, like, Tina Fey. And I get upset when this stuff happens. The reason I get upset is because, like, when David Letterman, you know, went off the air, it's the same idea. It's like, who's going to replace Letterman? Why don't they give it to a woman? Why don't they give it to Tina Fey? Why don't they give this? I was like... What if they asked Tina Fey and Tina Fey said no?
Just no, don't want to.
Like,
do
who
want
do,
to
like,
do movies?
You know, like,
I want to write.
So, like, while I do think you do need more diversity and you need more women's voices and opinions and all that kind of stuff, I do think it's very simplistic to just to say, well, they didn't offer to a woman because a woman didn't end up getting the position. And Jessica Williams came in a time of The Daily Show when they were catching some shit for having like an all-males writer room. Mm-hmm. So she gets a lot of credit for that. She's also just awesome. Like every segment she's ever done has been terrific.
As far as Mark's concerned here with Facebook, I mean, look, here's the deal. Comedy's subjective. Who's presenting the comedy is subjective. If you don't like Trevor, you don't like Trevor. I personally love Trevor. I think he's great. I think he's good. He's a different voice. Like anything, if you don't like it at first, give it a try. Keep giving it a try. Mm-hmm. I mean... Look, Jon Stewart had to overcome the same thing, too. He wasn't the original host either.
But and Jon Stewart didn't get any traction until, like, Indecision 2008,
sure.
Whatever that year was.
Sure, no one was
actually,
paying attention.
Actually, I think, like, post-9/11, like, Jon Stewart really kind of came into his own. So it was Indecision 2002 or whatever that was.
But the point is, it's like, just, dude, it's still The Daily Show. It's still awesome.
Here's the other thing I don't think people realize, and this might be people like old crotchety men like you and me, and I don't know our listener Mark's answer or not. Like, I don't know what his age or anything about him, but, like, Trevor Noah...
I'll take a guess. Here, let me look at his photo. I'm going to say this guy's 26.
Oh, okay. I expected an older dude. Here's why. Trevor Noah is not watched live, but there's reports and there's been articles written about The Daily Show is streamed constantly online and people are watching full episodes of The Daily Show on computers as much as they are watching it on television. And let's be honest, that's where everything's going. So in a couple years, like, we might not see any ratings on television. There might not be any television ratings because everyone's watching online. So Trevor's going younger, which I think is good for the future of The Daily Show and the future of Comedy Central because, I mean, let's be honest, Jon Stewart was older and his audience was older by the time that he was done. I mean, I think his average age skewed probably in the 50s. If I had to guess, I wouldn't be surprised if Trevor hit the 30s as far as like who he hits. So
right.
I think you kind of need that. And, you know, and as the old regime gets old and they get crazy and their old crazy ideas happen and then, you know, it's just kind of the way it all works. I mean, I say this all the time about politics. I'm like, just old people need to die before we can get any sort of new ideas in there.
Wow.
And then the generation after
us
is going to say the same fucking thing, though.
So aggressive.
But, Mark, you're trying to tell me the generation after us is not going to say the same thing?
Of course they are.
Fucking old people need to die so we can get this new blood into the system. That's the way it works.
I just can't wait till music from the 80s is considered oldies.
Dude, 80s? It's come already. Nirvana, which came in the 90s, is heard on classic rock channels. It's like, what's it, 25 years and it's considered a classic? Yeah, Nirvana's on classic rock channels.
Love
You're
it.
Past the 80s, dude.
Damn it. All right. Goes fast, kids. Cherish every moment.
Close that book on listener feedback.
All right. At the Laugh Button on all the social medias.
Or
and,
drop us an email, podcast@thelaughbutton.com.
Exactly. All right. Scott Armstrong coming up in just a bit. We'll do this quick.
Okay.
We'll do this quick because we don't want to go too far into Clown Town here because we're about halfway out of gas. So it's festival season.
Yeah.
That's a true statement. If you go to the laughbutton.com, as these festivals are getting announced as far as lineups are concerned and dates, we'll have all the latest information. In fact, today, or actually yesterday at the release of this podcast, and put up the information in regards to the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival. We already have JFL news that comes in almost every day. Brooklyn Comedy Festival, Oddball, High Plains. I can't read your handwriting. I don't know what the rest
well,
of it says,
Matt. We just did Skankfest, or just Limestone Festival just happened. Before you know it, it'll be the New York Comedy Festival. Oddball's coming up, dude. What do you think? Here's the thing about Oddball. Oddball has not made the announcement of its lineup this year.
I know. It's crazy.
Which is weird. Well, it's not weird because like I think last year
it
Oddball.
It's a little weird. I mean, come on.
Well, usually Oddball
plan.
Is
it's the summer.
It's usually the end of August, most of September and October. Mm-hmm. So they should be announcing their lineup any day now. That's usually when Oddball runs. Now, here's what I don't know. Who are they going to get to headline Oddball? They started with Chappelle. They followed that up with Louis.
Not George Carlin or Mitch Hedberg, I'll tell
they
you that.
And then last year they did a co-headlining tour between Aziz Ansari and Amy Schumer. Mm-hmm. Who's left? Because, like, obviously, the Oddball tour, which I love and I've gone to every year.
Jim Gaffigan.
Okay. You definitely need that caliber. I mean, these places that Oddball fit, these are 13,000, 14,000 sheds and shacks out in PNC Arts Center. Or,
Jim Gaffigan.
You know, okay, so you got Gaffigan.
Mm-hmm.
But who else could they get that's that caliber? Kevin Hart?
No, he's not doing it.
You don't think Kevin Hart's doing Oddball?
No, he just did like an arena. He did like a fucking stadium tour.
Okay.
What's he going to... Who's just doing 45,000 seaters?
You're trying to say 13,000? On his own. He's not doing... But I think like Kevin...
No, because he wants to take a break. Dude, he has a new movie coming out every week. And he's got...
Okay.
The dude's busy, man.
Okay. Who can do that? Who is that caliber that can headline Oddball? I mean, one of the great things about Oddball is they have a side stage, a bunch of up-and-coming guys. They have probably...
Gabriel Iglesias.
10 dudes that like are like your Mulaney's of the world and your Jim...
All right, just gave you two. Jim Gaffigan.
Jim Gaffigan, okay.
Gabriel Iglesias.
I don't think Gabriel Iglesias could do it.
Really?
Here's why.
100% definitely can.
Here's why. I know he can technically sell out a room that size, but the tour doesn't really go through parts of the country that Gabriel
where he's
Iglesias
popular?
Is popular in.
Russell Peters.
I think he has the same Gabriel Iglesias issue.
Really? Okay.
Larry the Cable Guy? See, Oddball's a little more alternative.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
I think Larry, Russell, and Gabe are a little bit too fastballs down the middle.
Maria Bamford.
Is the Bammer going to sell out 13,000?
New show on Netflix. She's killing it right now.
I'm not saying she's not killing it.
Wait, Patton Oswalt.
Patton could do it. I think Patton could do it. What about, like, you mentioned this once when we last talked about this. What about Doug Stanhope?
Yeah, sure.
You
absolutely.
Think Stanhope could
do it? I don't
think
it's his crowd or vibe or whatever.
I don't think
it's his vibe
at all.
But what if they get back the original comedians, you know?
The comedians of comedy?
Yeah, comedians
like
of comedy.
Like Patton, Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, Brian Posehn,
Maria Bamford.
Yeah.
That'd be fun, too.
Yeah, let's reunite.
How many years has it been? It has to be at least 15 years.
It's been a long time. The point is,
those
four on the bill are getting the job done.
The comedians of comedy are coming back.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
I mean, all four of those fit the Oddball vibe.
Here's the thing, though. The point I'm trying to make is there's not many people that could do
this. Yeah, it goes from, like, people who do The Garden now.
Yeah.
A couple people underneath that. And then everybody else that's
like
successful.
Brian Regan can do Radio City Music Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Regan's a beast. Ken Brian Regan, is he known by the Alterna Oddball crowd
no.
enough to sell that out?
He's known by them, but it's not the right vibe. That's,
it's either
that's
that
why I'm saying
or
it's the comedians
completely different
of comedy.
People. It's tough, man. Like, Oddball set the bar.
Stephen Wright.
I don't know. Oddball set the bar high. Like, I'm curious to see what they're going to come back with. Because they went real high. I mean, when you come out of the gate swinging with Dave Chappelle, where do you go?
I'm trying to think of Seinfeld? Any comedian that Graham likes in The Office.
Aziz, Amy, Louis, Chappelle. Oddball.
That's what I'm saying.
I know.
That's what I'm saying. So who else does he like?
That's who's doing Oddball. That's all he knows.
Maybe he knows something we don't know.
I guess, maybe.
All right, shout out to Graham in The Office.
I mean, like, could like a How Did This Get Made crew do it? Like Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, June Diane Raphael. They sell out those How This Get Made live.
Paul Scheer, maybe. Because like, he's got a big following.
But they sell out like Largo. And how big's Largo? 150?
Paul Scheer, that whole... Again, that would be a group dynamic there.
It would have to be the whole crew.
Right.
Like, that's why, like, Aziz and Amy Schumer, they were billing that as like a co-headlining thing, but Amy Schumer headlined that, basically.
Marc Maron.
I don't know if Maron's big enough. 13,000? I mean, here's the other thing.
He gets a million downloads of a burp he puts into a microphone.
But here's the other thing, though, too, is also, like, you go to Oddball because, like, it's 10 of your favorite comedians.
Right, that's like, all we're talking about here.
I know, but,
so
like...
So if you have Mike Birbiglia and then a boatload of awesome people...
But I've also been to the show, and, like, there's a definite difference between when Dave Chappelle took the stage... And when Hannibal Buress, Chris D'Elia, Jay Farrow, John Mulaney, Sarah Silverman, all those other people.
Hannibal could headline now.
I think Hannibal might. Maybe.
Dude's in tons of movies now, man.
He is. He's Hannibal.
Secret Life of Pets. He's in that, too.
Louis, Kevin Hart, Hannibal.
Just in Angry Birds. A lot of animation.
Gaffigan
Neighbors 2, he was
in. I wonder if Gaffigan might be that interesting call. Interesting. Anyway... I'm excited for Oddball. Whatever they do, I go to the show. It's a blast. I go to PNC Arts every year. It's a blast. You walk around and like you look out and you're like, holy shit, 13,000 people are here to see comedy. That's incredible.
All right. We got to get to Scott Armstrong. But let's play a quick round of overrated,
we can
underrated.
After the interview.
Okay. We'll hold it till after. Yeah. And then maybe next week we'll try to invent our own comedy festival and see what our lineups would be.
We will call it the Laugh Button. Button Fest.
The Button Fest. Yeah, maybe that's what you're calling yours. I don't know what I'm calling mine yet.
Well, are you calling it Mark Says High Plains Festival?
No, but that's a great
Mark
idea.
Mark Says High Plains Comedy
that
Festival.
That I'm going to be pitching them as soon as this podcast taping's over. All right. So here's Scott Armstrong. And everybody, I implore you to check out Search Party. It's a new movie to us, but it's not a new movie to Scott Armstrong, but it is unbelievably funny. I had to almost watch this thing twice in a row because it was that funny, and I felt like I missed half the movie.
You've yet to bring it in for me to see. Well, that's promised me you'd give it to me.
Because I'm literally watching it again. Right. Like, I'm halfway through it again.
Well, know I'm putting it on record. Said you'd lend it to me. Write it down in your paper
somewhere. You can rent it off me.
Okay.
And then I'll send the money to you, Scott. All right. Here's Scott Armstrong, everyone.
What are we, Hollywood and Highland? Is this your favorite hotel?
Yeah, this is, I can't say it's my favorite hotel.
It's really
the first time
your drug deals?
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever been to this hotel, and now you just blew my cover, so I can't, now I have to cancel a lot of shit.
Cancel a lot of drug deals?
Yeah, so thanks a lot for that. I appreciate it. That other voice you're hearing that's not mine belongs to Scott Armstrong, and he also plays Scott Armstrong in real life, and 1T, so no confusion.
Born that way.
Yeah, right. Born that way.
When I was younger, people thought that I was like trying to be cool with my fancy 1T name, but it was on my birth certificate.
What are you, a skateboarder? Is that what, what would Scott with 1T, that'd be the British way, I guess?
I don't know. I just thought of trying to be different.
You're like, I had
came
nothing
from
to do with that,
I was
right?
Suppressed at every turn.
Gotcha. Where are you from originally?
Chicago. I was born in Minneapolis.
Okay.
St. Paul, Minneapolis. And then when I was like one, my parents moved to Chicago and grew up there. And then I went to Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois, another great town. And then I lived in Chicago. I did like Second City training and Improv Olympic and studied with Del Close at Improv Olympic.
That's awesome. So you got ties to
a lot
to
of
the...
really, really famous people were there. I used to go. They're all famous now.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But it's funny how many great people were at Improv Olympic when I was studying there. I just go to the shows and I remember seeing like... Amy Poehler and Tina Fey and all the Upright Citizens Brigade before they started their theater, and like even like Jon Favreau, Adam McKay, like just like figuring things out, you know.
It's Andy unbelievable. Dick. Yeah, Andy Dick too.
There's a lot of Koechner. I don't know. You can name a million people.
Yeah, you can't, and everyone will know who you're talking about.
I was on a team with Jack McBrayer.
What? Nice.
My first long form improvisation, whatever team.
He's from Macon, right? Macon, Georgia, I think.
I know he's
speaking
from the
of
south.
Towns. Yeah, Macon.
I know he's tan, and I know he's from the south. Those are the two things I know about Jim.
There was a hockey team. The reason I remember this is because in Macon, Georgia, there was a hockey team called the Macon Whoopee, and they stole the old.
That's bad.
Yeah, they stole the old Toronto Maple Leafs logo, like not the proper like squared off type leaf, the one that looked weathered and tattered. Uh-huh. Yeah, making Whoopi. That was a real thing.
So a bad name and a stolen logo. That's a good way to start a team.
But who's going to stop them? No one's going to Macon, right? You had never heard of it. You're like, I don't even know. Who cares?
You don't want to get involved with a hockey team. You don't know what they're capable of.
It's true. So does that make you a Cubs fan? Are you a Cubbies guy?
White Sox.
No.
But you know what? I know I'm not allowed to switch, but this year,
the
Cubs
year.
Are so interesting.
It's
you know, they
have
all these great young players, and like the White Sox are like have dissolved any kind of like valid soul of any kind. I mean, when Canerico retired, I kind of. And when do you really watch? I mean, honestly,
yeah.
When am I watching a full baseball game? Like.
Well, you're a busy guy.
Well, I mean,
there's a lot of
people
that aren't
watch
busy.
Complete baseball
sure,
games.
100%. I watched one the other night. I went to.
But I'm not going to watch us on a satellite dish like a White Sox full game. Like I just don't. I like them.
So true though.
Know. If they're in the playoffs, I'll watch either Cubs or White Sox.
I think once you hit a certain age, there's two things that change when you hit a certain age. You stop watching complete games, like you mentioned, and you stop wearing jerseys of guys who are younger than you. Right, like
no, I still wear them.
You do?
Yeah,
but
I just got a game worn jersey. The Dodgers batting coach, I forget his name, but it was like cheaper to get a batting coach, and I thought that was pretty cool, so I wear that. And
it's great.
And I just got a for my birth or for my for what was it for Christmas? I just got a Matt Forte Bears jersey, and I was really disappointed in my wife because she should have known that he was gonna get. Unsigned.
She was being thrifty, you know.
She paid full price. She paid retail.
No, she did not.
Yeah, she did. It did not. No,
it wasn't 50% off yet.
Yeah.
Wow, that's bad. Yeah, he went bye bye.
My friend got a jersey, a Walter Payton jersey, and it was autographed. But then we realized that it was like the new kind of jersey that Walter Payton wasn't alive for and could never have signed, and that was really sad. Again, full retail.
Oh man. Yeah, you got to be careful with those Cooperstown collections. Yeah. Cooper spelled with one O, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're responsible for a plethora of comedies that ring true in today's psyche. I think people spit out your lines without even knowing what it's from, possibly. That's how ingrained you are in pop culture.
I heard earmuffs this morning.
Did you?
I was like, I don't know. Someone was just like joking around, like they shouldn't be talking out loud about something. Said earmuffs.
And he's like earmuffs.
Yeah,
that's forever.
That's a forever.
That's a who you gonna call? That's a where's the beef? I mean, you're right up there, man, with the top ten.
I think I don't know. I don't know if it's as good as where's the beef, but it's people remember it.
So does that make you proud, especially from a writer's perspective? Because writers are the unsung hero of comedy, right? I mean, most stand-ups, they write their own stuff, so that's different. But someone who writes a feature film that's a comedy, and obviously the stars get lots of the glory, and they're performing it, and you know, they're half the weapon. But you're putting pen to paper or keystroke to whatever computer. It must be pretty awesome. It's like a trophy when something like that happens, right?
I mean, it's fun, I guess. I don't know. It's not like I'm always just trying to do something that I want to do next or try to do something. I'm always just trying to make something really good. I just want to do good stuff, you know. I don't really, like, analyze it like that or like, think about it. I'm just, like, excited about my next thing usually and trying to. I mean, I feel like I sound like an NBA basketball player or whatever. There was, like, the next game is a big one. But I really don't, like, like once we finish something, I really do just sort of move on.
You're done, moved on. Right?
I really do try to have a good time when it releases because you never know, like, half time it's a stinker, half time it's a hit. It's a hit or not. Or you don't know what's going to happen. It's just kind of going into a buzzsaw. So I try and, for myself and for everybody that we all worked with, I try and make sure that we, like, see that the project took a lot of effort, a couple years of effort, and is something that we did and put so much into. And then, like, whatever happens, happens. You know, I try and be, like, healthy like that. But it's obviously so fun. Like, old school is definitely, like, the one that people seem to, like,
just
really love. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, who knows?
Well, that's not to take away.
You never know. You could never set out to do something like that. It just, you know, those guys were all so young and hungry at the time, just like we were, like, basically got like Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn and all those other guys in the cast and, you know, Luke Wilson at their in their prime, up and coming, and Todd Phillips too, and myself working together, and it turned out good.
Yeah, it turned out all right.
Yeah, you never know, man. You never know.
but it's true. You don't know what's going to hit and what's not. And like you said, it could boil all the way down to just timing. You know, there's so many great comedies that have come and gone that didn't miss the boat because they weren't good. It just, for whatever reason, it wasn't the right time.
It's
maybe
literally impossible to like control everything and know what's really going to, you know, whatever. I could go on and on.
Yeah.
Don't put this on. Cut this all this stuff out. This is lame.
The last 20 minutes, if you just heard a long tone noise. Yeah, it was some really inside stuff, inside baseball. All right. So when did I'm gonna ask you one more nerdy question if I can.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when you realized something was funny? Like at what age you were like, oh, that's funny. That's making me laugh. I'm aware of it now. And if I can do that same thing and get the reaction, like you got the whole concept. You know what I mean? Do you remember that?
I don't really remember that. I remember I used to draw cartoons, like kind of like, even when I was really young, I used to draw cartoons that were like kind of like Far Side or like, okay. And I would, or like this, that. Remember Herman?
Oh sure.
I used to draw like Herman style cartoons with like captions and scenarios about my family and stuff. And I remember my grandparents like really thought they were funny, and everyone thought they were really funny, and they would put them up. And I was really young when I was doing that. I remember that was like my thing, you know. I always felt like that was one of the first things. I was a cartoonist all the way through, you know, going into college. I thought maybe I might become a cartoonist.
And what stopped you? I mean, why did you?
I decided, you know, I just wanted to do more stuff. It felt a little like, well, A, I didn't want to just dedicate my entire life to becoming an expert at that craft. You know what I mean? I wanted to like, but I got into advertising. I felt like I went to like this career, what do you call it? Career day or whatever at high school.
Sure.
And I went to, and I saw like a small business owner. And then I saw a guy who was a pilot, and then I saw a guy who was a creative director at an advertising agency. And then the small business owner ran like this pet store. He had to work like 14 hours a day and clean the cages and trying to figure out the computer and do the taxes. And it sounded like the worst. And then the next guy was like, he had to go into the 6 years of like flight training and all this, like tons of math. And all I was like, I don't want to do that. And then I just realized I just like being up in the air is really all I liked. And then...
This is a very helpful career day for you.
It was
man.
A great career day. And then the creative director is like, we just get paid a lot of money and we sit around trying to think of ideas and like thought of this, and you get paid as much as my brother was a doctor. I'm like, I'm doing that. Yeah, just think of ideas. Like, how is that? I kept asking questions like, but what about all the marketing details? And like, he's like, no, someone else does that. Someone else manages the client. Someone else actually shoots the commercial. No, you don't have to do anything except for just think of the ideas. I was like, something just went off in me, and 100%, that's what I was going to do the rest of my life. And then I was really ambitious about advertising at first. And then, I realized, I could probably get away with doing comedy too if I tried. And, and then I was able to shift from advertising to writing.
Nice. Smooth transition, I guess.
Me and Todd Phillips, I hired him to direct a commercial in advertising like a long time ago. That's how I first met him. And then we really hit it off.
What was it a commercial for? Is this a YouTubeable?
Milo Genuine Draft. No, don't. Don't. It's not even anything good. I don't know. I don't remember what
it is. It's not about it being good or not. Yeah. I think... You know, no one likes half the police's box set. You know
no
what I mean?
No one likes what? Sorry?
Half of the police's box set. You know, it's like you get it and you're like, oh, cool. The winners are the winners. And there's a reason I don't know 45 of these songs. You know, but the completist has to have them. And they just appreciate them for what they are, I guess.
I'm not going to compare that commercial to a bad police song, because a bad police song is probably way better.
Okay, that's fair.
Todd... obviously, you know, he's a huge filmmaker before even getting into comedy. He was like in, he did documentaries, the incredible movie Frat House for HBO. Before that, he did Hated, which was, you know, one of them won Sundance. Which one was it?
Okay.
I think it was Frat House. Anyway, that led to some opportunities that luckily I was invited to come with on. And then we ended up selling the pitch for Road Trip. Which is a shift in tone, but something we both really wanted to do.
That's good. That's cool. So it worked out. And then now you have proof of concept. Was it a little bit easier afterwards for you? Like doors opened up?
Was it easier to write a movie after I'd already sold a movie, you mean?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No, but the opportunity to give to yeah, I guess so, to sell a movie
yeah,
after.
Yeah, obviously. It was like so much, you know, that's the whole thing. It's always like a catch-22. There's a million people that, it's like, how can you write a screenplay if you've never written a screenplay? Or how can you direct a pilot if you've never directed a pilot? How do you direct an episode? How do you direct TV if you can't direct, if you've only directed movies? How do you direct a movie if you've only directed TV? It's like,
you just have to
all this
do
stuff
it,
is basically not that different. You know, there's different lengths and different act breaks and stuff yet a smart person can figure out. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing, I think, is having like a real ear for tone and being funny, I guess.
What do you think the most important aspect of comedy is? Comedians always say nothing is funnier than the truth, right? Like the truth will always be the funniest thing. Do you believe that? Or do you think like silliness is the most important thing, or do you think dialogue or timing? Like what do you think the most
I feel like a real jerk having a real rule for comedy. Like I don't like to be the guy who does that, but for my style, it's like most of the best stuff I think comes from things that are sort of inspired from the actual character. Like only that character would do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the best stuff. Like that, like you create a character so detailed, no matter how broad or straight or grounded or whatever it is. If you know that character so detailed that it's only funny if they say it, then or do it, then that's funny. You know that's when you're on.
That's a winner.
Like if you have a script that's literally there's almost no jokes in it because it's literally just people deciding things that only they would do, and it's funny because they just you believe that they would do those, and it's not a stretch. That's when you're really wired, I think. You know what I mean? Like I didn't write Seinfeld, but like only Kramer would do what? You know what I mean? Like
sure.
Only, and then like in my work, you're talking about old school, like Frank the Tank, only he gets away with stuff. He's not really saying jokes. He's not, it's not like a
he's just
three camera
him.
Sitcom or something. It's like he's just, you just have something figured. And a lot of it, by the way, is Will Ferrell just creating this character with us and taking, you know, I feel like as a writer, a lot of it is just doing, creating a plan for other people to be funny. And I think that that's part of why I've had some success. I think it's just always approaching things as like, okay, what's the end result here? We want these guys to feel great on the day and like the audience to feel it all together. You know, and it's never really the writer. Things don't really work out when the writer's just trying to show off and just be as like absurd or be like as have the craziest references ever or whatever. Like that's almost about the writer's ego more than it is about a good plan for something to be good.
I posted to our website the Red Band International trailer for Search Party.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And the first thing that happened, literally 30 seconds after I posted it, TJ Miller retweets and says, "Fuck yeah," all caps.
Oh, good.
Whole bunch of exclamation points.
He
that's got to feel pretty good for your directorial debut.
He's like
debut,
one of my
right?
favorites of all time to ever worked with. I really feel like I don't know. We had sounds so dumb to say, but we just had a special connection on the set and working and developing that character. Again, talking about character, like by the end of that, shooting that movie, I knew everything that was, his character's called Jason in the movie. Everything that Jason would do or say, like it was only he could get away with that stuff. Only he would do that stuff. It was like very specific to him. And it's like my favorite thing that he's ever done personally. I mean, he's done a lot of,
nice.
He makes me laugh all the time, but, I feel like we really got something going with him that was really good for him. Like I felt that's if I have like a, I don't know. I always feel like I'm like too excited about myself when I talk on these things. I always
okay,
stop myself.
Man.
No, but if I have a
you
thing
should
that I'm
be.
No, but if I have
look
a thing
job,
that I'm
man, it's not even a job.
If
it's
I have
best.
A thing that I'm good at, I think it's probably listening to like what whoever I'm working with, a performer or casting, like trying to figure out what makes them work for them the best, like putting them in the wheelhouse, whatever it is that the
their
layman's
pocket,
term.
Their
or whatever.
Special
I just
pocket.
Want to get them feeling good and doing things that are really specific to them, and then bringing that out and getting performances that way. That's all we did on the set of Search Party, and the same thing with Middle Ditch, doing something completely different than you've seen ever do on like Silicon Valley. So, you know, half the time super coked up, accidentally coked up out of his mind, and just like, you know, just really thrown to the fire, like fucking brilliant performance from Middle Ditch. And then Pally, so good in this. He's like the lead, you know, he's like the main character, you know, they're all three the main characters, but like we follow this character, his name's Evan, and those three together, the camaraderie between him and TJ, and then the camaraderie with the three of them together, and like, I don't know, it's so good. Really the most fun I've had creating something. I loved, I don't know, just the, it's not just like the camaraderie and laughing around like between takes. It was actually doing the movie that was fun. Like like figuring it out together and building this thing. I'm really excited for people to finally see it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pally's a beast too, man.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
Ever since Happy Endings, like.
Well, I've known him for years.
He
used to do, he and I performed in the same
guy.
Theater. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I used to do UCB in New York, and so did he. And,
when did what era
funny.
Were you?
Oh my God, what?
What era were you? Because I did all the classes, sketch and improv, but this was early
2000. The UCB era I was
like
in was the first one because I was there before we had a theater. I was doing classes, you know, when we rented a space on the side, you know, helped build the very first one.
That's amazing.
You know,
yeah.
My first class I went in was me, Riggle, Shear, Hubel, Jackie yeah. Clark, who I write with now,
mm-hmm.
Owen Burke, who's like big at Funny or Die now, yeah. So funny. Daniel Schneider, who married the teacher Matt Besser,
mm-hmm.
and it's super funny. And her writing partner Donna Fineglass, I think, was in that class. It was a
wow.
That's your first. That's my first class, and
let's
then
see, that's the
and that's
everybody.
After I'd already been in Chicago.
Okay,
you know? And then I got assigned to a Herald team or whatever you call them. And then, so I had never met any of these guys before, and I went to meet for a drink. Armando Diaz cast me, and we all met Armando at a bar, and it was me. And for the first time I met Jason Mantzoukas, Jessica St. Clair, John Daly.
Wow.
You know, like so many great people, and all the rest of the cast of Mother who are all doing awesome. That was super fun.
That's pretty good.
And I was in that one of the early shows memories. There too was Feature was it, which had like, you know, Cordry and Husky and mm-hmm. Seth Morris and Jamie Denbo, met her husband, John Bowie there. You know, it was just like Andrew Secundo, I still perform with. It was like
the pedigree,
really
man.
Like that first year, you know, whatever that was in the 90s. Crazy. Like, and I never. And at the time, I appreciated it, too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, I should have appreciated it. It was like, I couldn't believe it. And I kept taking, you know, I was there all the time. We worked.
It's addicting, right? You just
well,
every
I just,
night
I
of
just
the week.
I knew that there were so many special people there, so many talented, crazy talented people.
Was it pretty?
And I loved doing it. You know, I never was doing long-form improv because I was going to be a great performer or a great actor or I was going to be on Saturday Night Live. I never had any ambitions about that at all. I literally just do it because I love to do it. And, you know, it helps my writing, I guess, but I really just like to do it, you know?
So, I mean, with all that said, it's just pretty crazy. You must have shared some pretty special moments on stage with all these people. But was it pretty wild to go from Chicago to New York and see some other people from your class start a theater? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, by the
well,
way, we're just starting
school. You know
what?
Kind of, but not really, because it was so small. You know what I mean? It was always a struggle. Those
yeah.
guys, we barely had anything going. Like, those guys, you know, it was always just, like, this small little black box that, you know, it used to be a strip bar, and, like, people would come in and look, expect to see naked girls there or whatever, and then, like, leave bummed out. And, like, first show was, like, 11 people in the audience, you know, really small. You know, I mean, obviously, I was never surprised that Amy Poehler and Matt Walsh and Ian Robertson, Matt Besser, they could do anything because they would just do something on the street and a giant crowd would gather around or whatever. They could rent a space and I went to these shows and there'd be a line down the block just like there is now at all the theaters. It was
yeah,
crazy. So I was
them.
Never surprised about that, but I wasn't that shocked because they were so good. And then, you know, the theater was small. It really like built so slowly, incrementally. And now I, you know, whatever it is, 16 years later, I'm going to the 17th Del Close Marathon. Ever. You know, I was
yeah.
at the first one, you know, I can't believe it's been 17 years. I feel like such an old man, but, you know, now I can't even put it into context, even like it is pretty big. It's crazy.
Did you see the Del Close doc yet?
You know what? I'm like late to the party. I haven't seen it. I know that Matt was really happy with the reaction.
It's good. Yeah. I can't wait for you to see it.
All right, cool.
I'd be curious to get your reaction because, I mean, you're there from the beginning, right? So
I was studying with him for a couple of years, but I felt like I got the disinterested Dell. Like he wasn't like, he's just kind of like there, you know, like
the on the way out Dell.
The one thing he did to me was he was, for some reason, he was like annoyed with me for something or whatever. and he like just left me on stage in a terrible scene for like 7 minutes with me and my, whoever that scene partner I was with, I can't remember, but it was like, didn't like, basically proving a point. Like if you don't do a strong initiation and listen and build something from there, like then you're going to be screwed. And so he just left us up there like in a terrible scene for like 7 full minutes, just dying. It's just like such a dick move. But that's kind of, he was very passive aggressive in his teaching.
You got the Axl Rose Use Your Illusion tour.
Yeah,
Del
I got
Close.
The, exactly. I got the, yeah. That's, I can't, I was trying to think of a Sting song. Not Sting. Yeah, I was trying to think of a Sting song because you were referencing the police.
Fields
earlier.
Of Gold, I think
bad
is the only.
Game gone wrong.
It's okay. It's all good. I'll insert something with a robot voice.
Okay, good.
I'll save you. So back to Search
you
Party.
Do you do that often? You insert several robot voice jokes?
No. Okay. No. I don't think I've ever
done
that.
That'd be great.
Sting's Fields of Gold is my Vietnam.
Back to Search Party. So for the people that aren't aware of it or are just now discovering it, when did you directed this? And this is your first...
Yeah, I co-wrote it and I directed it. First movie I directed.
Right. And
I've worked on several movies, but, you know, it's obviously very different than, you know, when you're the director, it's like completely different than anything else you've ever done. Like, you know, there is a reason it's... People are worried about the first-time director because you're really drinking out of a fire hose. It's like, but it was, I was so
is that a UHF
pleasantly
reference?
What's that?
Was that a UHF reference?
UHF, drinking out of a fire hose?
Yeah, when speaking of Kramer and Seinfeld, we'll bring this like triple full
UHF?
Circle. Yeah, UHF, the Weird Al Yankovic movie.
Wait,
and he goes,
drinking out of a fire hose is the most popular phrase. It means really busy. Everyone says that. It's not a UHF reference. You're insane. Lost your mind.
You know, you found the marble in the oatmeal. You got to drink from the fire hose. You don't remember this scene?
Oh, no. I'm going to look this up, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Little Billy found a marble in the oatmeal. It was like a contest on this fake show that was on TV.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, you got the marble. And he's like, now
is this
you
Weird
get to,
Al?
Yeah, yeah. Now you
Not
get to,
Kramer.
No.
Okay.
Well, Michael Richards is in the movie.
Right, right.
He's predominant. Role in there, but yeah, and so this kid gets
wasn't that up? That movie was up against like the 5 biggest movies of all time.
Yeah,
if you look at it, that movie
maybe?
Was supposed to be brilliant, but it was like up against like
Batman,
Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Batman or something. It was like all these movies out that was like impossible for it to do well.
Right.
Whatever. I don't remember.
Sorry, I didn't mean to knock us off course, Firehose. You're right. It's pretty busy.
Pretty crazy. It was like that's what helped us on when I remember Road Trip. We were up against like Battleship Earth, and it was supposed to smash us.
Mega bomb, man!
And that helped us seriously. That was a pivotal thing to happen. To just a little trickle of money came to our movie because of that, and it was so helpful. You know?
Do you remember all the movies you were up against then? Like
No. Early on, I would just like I was so obsessed with like I just honestly I didn't want it. I wasn't trying to like dominate. The world, right? I just wanted to get to work again, another mm-hmm. gig. I wanted to do next year to happen. And if things didn't like open, then you're screwed, you know? So I did like overanalyze that stuff. Now I don't worry about it at all. I really don't. I try not to. I guess I'm fortunate enough to be able to just like focus on what I'm doing and excited about doing it.
I feel like you already have 10 other things you're kind of working on separately. And then they'll just come out whenever they come out.
I'll be flying to Israel on a top secret project real to meet with a puppeteer.
What?
In a puppeteer's warehouse.
Nice.
In Israel. It's really, that's my tease.
Okay.
It'll launch in 2018, this show. No, but really, I really am going to meet with this guy. I'm excited about some other weird thing that might happen.
That's great. Well, what do you got on the docket? Yeah, I got to get over to Israel, get this puppet guy talking to. That's not a Skypeable moment. You gotta get over there and see the goods, I guess, right?
It's funny. I've never had a hiatus before. Mm-hmm. Like I always have been lucky enough to be like, oh, I finished a movie and I'm going to do my next thing. And, you know, he's always like a deadline. It's always like make your own. I don't know, for me, I'm always like wired to like finish the next thing. spend more time with my kids, hang out.
I was gonna say, what's on the list?
Trying
of things
to get in shape, trying to get ripped.
Just do the paleo diet. You'll lose all the fat, and
walking over here, I saw Cyclolotties. Do you do Cyclolotties?
No, I just
that's
eat
real
healthy.
Dumb. You're
and
on a bike.
And
you're doing Pilates. That doesn't make any. Only in Hollywood, man. We're on Hollywood Highland. And I said, "Saw Cyclolotties." Not only is it a thing, it's not just a word; it's a storefront. Like they pay rent, insurance costs, employees, health benefits. Cyclolotties can afford all this? What's going on?
So, back to Search Party real quick. Let's name drop because this thing's packed with beautiful comedy people. We named T.J. Miller. We named Middle Ditch. Jason Mantzoukas is in this as well, right?
Oh my God, yeah.
And he's
one of my great friends. We met at the bar with Armando Diaz.
He's one of the funniest people on earth, too. Yeah, that guy's just automatically funny.
Yeah. I still perform with him in Soundtrack at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater every Friday with him and Husky. And really fun.
Does it just feel, man, it must just feel like a bike ride when you go back to the on stage. It's like no nerves, low pressure. You get nervous?
They all make fun of me because I still get a little nervous. I don't get nervous unless there's someone I know in the audience. Which is so weird. It's so like I've been doing this for whatever. I'm an old man now, but
My grandpa's like 95. You're not old man. You're fine.
I feel like if I'm performing for drunk college kids, it's the perfect. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm going to the YMCA to play like basketball with like amazing basketball dunkers. You know, like I'm like the short white guy that'll just throw like alley oops.
Yeah, you'll
like
get
people.
Tons of assists.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what
like
I do on stage.
Assists.
So sometimes I get nervous.
So it sounds like you're a big sports guy. So when did you realize...
Too many sports analogies?
No. I think...
That's what semi-pro came from.
Too many
love
sports
of
analogies?
70s basketball. Yeah.
So the Bulls, obviously your team, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
I refuse to watch them this year because they fired Thibodeau.
Yeah, that was a bad move. Why did they do that?
Not only was it wrong, but it was like just against everything a Chicago sports team should stand for. It's like they basically fired him because he was making the players try too hard. Playing too good, trying too hard on defense or whatever. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
They blamed him for like wearing guys out. It's like,
wait, didn't Ditka have like a similar sitch? Didn't he get?
He had
like a bad ending for a while, and they had to wait 20 years to make up. And I started watching that.
Ditka should have won a couple Super Bowls. He only won one. That's one. Dig on him. He's obviously a legend, though.
Yeah, he's a legend. He's good. He never finishes a sentence.
I get
though.
Ditka
wine
every year. Great what? Ditka wine. That's another thing.
He has wine?
Ditka has wine? He has a winery.
In Chicago?
I try and give that away for Christmas is the Ditka wine.
It's good?
Year.
Red,
it's
white?
Really, yeah, delicious.
What's the select? What's the Ditka year? What's it, 85? Did he start it in 85?
That
would have been good.
Perfect. Tannins. Clingy. What do you call it?
I'm not a big wine connoisseur. So
delicious tannins.
I'm still working on cereal selections, man. I haven't upgraded to the wine yet. So when did you realize you weren't going to be a professional athlete? When was that exact moment? When did that happen?
I thought I was going to pitch in the major leagues. From like 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, I was like throwing heat and I had a curveball. I would just play like in the All-Star games and stuff. And then I went to high school and I lost like a year because I was like older for my... We had a different league for like, it was different than high school. Mm-hmm. When you went to high school, I was like playing with guys kind of a year older than me, I felt like. And I went to like the whatever All-Star game or whatever. And I remember throwing in the first inning, my fastball had become like a changeup. Just like everyone had caught up to me and I was throwing this like bink way over the fence. The next one, bink. And I got knocked out of the first inning. It was like 10-0 or whatever. And I just realized, oh man, like... I was just good because I was little. I was playing against little kids, and now, like, real athletes are going to kill me.
That was it. Sox dreams for you.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. That's all right. You went on to do big things. I think
it's like, honestly, if I could change things, I don't know if I would be a pro athlete anymore. Like, I wanted to so bad when I was younger.
Why do you say that? That's
I don't know. It's like a lot of, like...
It's interesting.
You're just on the bus.
Yeah.
And you're, like,
on
really...
the road constantly.
You're just on the flights, and then you're just, like... putting out so much effort and like killing your knees and like I don't know, like now I'm like such a baby about that. I'm like, now I'm lazy. I'm like, I don't want to, like, I wouldn't want to just totally, or even in football I wanted to be like a free safety so bad. I don't want to bang my head, or like watching hockey they're going like 80 miles an hour into the glass, like
elbow to face,
I'm like, really
to glass.
Don't want to do that, like
Well, you're older and wiser now. And you
I
said
know,
you have
honestly.
A kid, right?
So I would maybe be a pro golfer, but even then, you're like, you're on the course, like, I don't want to play
that's
golf.
A, that's
like
almost a year-round gig.
50 holes a day forever, just buckets after buckets till your hands bleed. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure. I'm left-handed, so golfing was never going to happen because no one had left-handed clubs, and my parents weren't going to buy me those. They were like, yeah, that's not happening. So, but yeah,
I read somewhere that Belichick likes left-footed punters because it spins different.
Oh, weird.
Is that true?
Probably. I mean, knowing Belichick,
guys fumble it.
What? No, that fucking guy. Why couldn't he get it done for the Browns, man? Like, I'm from Cleveland, so it's very frustrating to know he was the coach of the Browns and he was
That's
terrible.
That's really sad. Now terrible. You guys got RG3.
who we traded away. We traded away a draft pick, and that draft pick was RG3 anyway. So now we get him damaged and old when no one likes him. Ugh, and
I feel bad for you.
It's all good, man. Cleveland sports, it's been a trip. And we didn't have hockey, so I was a big Whalers guy, and they, of course, disbanded and went away and won a championship somewhere else, so that wasn't good either. So I know how
but
to
you guys
them.
Get to keep your name. Like, your team
oh, yeah,
went
the history
to,
and everything.
Yeah, your
yeah,
team
sure.
went to
Baltimore. They
Baltimore,
were an expansion team.
But you still kept your Browns name.
Purple Browns, yeah.
I feel bad for you guys. I mean, I can't believe that Manziel would actually wear a costume, like makeup and costume, and go party in Vegas. That really happened. It's so brilliant.
Fake mustache.
What?
Throw money at the strippers.
Oh, my God. That really happened. Good job, Cleveland.
Oh, that was a shitty draft pick. It's funny because he came out and did the, you know, the money sign
Manziel's
thing.
Manziel's money sign.
And my wife, she's from Puerto Rico, so she doesn't understand American football. And, like, some mm-hmm. things just don't translate. She didn't know what that was. She's like, Why is he doing the tiny violin thing for everybody? And she thought it was because he got drafted.
Why is
so
he feeling
high.
Fabric?
Yeah, right. And she just did get it, and it was just so funny. And it's nice to keep her around for moments like that to get me through the terrible sports analogies. All right, so one, thank you for the time, man. I appreciate
it.
Congrats
you got it,
on
man.
All the
I
success.
Enjoyed it.
Much continued success.
And congrats on your this lobby you have here at this
yeah,
hotel.
You got it. I
you're holding it down.
You know it
nice
needs
sculpture over here.
I bought it cheap. I don't know.
Looking over the shoe palace outside.
Is that what? Oh, is that what the SP is?
Cyclolotties storefront.
I'm gonna challenge you to some Cyclolotties.
How do you keep score? I guess it's just how hard your core is.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the results are. I guess. Right. I don't know. But everything's analyzed now, right? The electrodes get stuck on you, and everybody knows every movement now.
Competitive Cyclolotties. That's the next league.
All right, Scott. Cheers, man.
All right, thanks.
Okay, that was Scott Armstrong. I want to thank him again for hanging out with me out in Los Angeles, California. And yeah, he was he was ripping into our locale. I don't know if he did. Maybe he didn't like my hotel. I don't know. No, I think he liked it. It was good. Great dude. So funny. So nice. A rich mind when it comes to comedy. He's been around anybody and everyone who's one of the major players in comedy today. He's a wealth of knowledge and experience, and it was a pleasure to have him on the pod. And hopefully, Scott, I'll see you again soon. And you just check out Search Party. It's amazing. All right, so let's play a quick game of Overrated, Underrated to send us on our way.
Which we played at Skankfest, and it was actually...
We did. It went well.
Went really well. The podcast was well received. People were laughing.
Yeah, hello. It was well received. A person laughed. Well, so that one person sometimes. Sounded like a whole yeah. packed out crowd.
Because we put some echo on it. We added
oh,
some
okay.
after.
Some slapback reverb.
We sweetened the audio.
No, we didn't sweeten anything. If you want to check out the Skankfest podcast that we taped live at said festival, it's the episode. You can download it right before the one that you're listening to. Right now, are you serious? This is what I just drew out of here. It's definitely not my handwriting.
What did you just draw out of there?
Overrated, underrated, Ohio. Ohio, definitely, 100%, without a doubt, underrated. It is probably the most underrated of all 50 states, and here's why.
I thought we'd make it through one podcast.
Because the ones that don't get named very often, like the Idahos and the Wyomings, and because
there's nothing in
the state, the states you don't know the capitals to, those aren't as underrated as Ohio, because Ohio gets shit on for absolutely no reason when it is the heart of America. It is the birthplace of aviation. This state, Ohio, the 19th state in the union, has produced more presidents of the United States of America than any other state.
Is that factually true?
100% factually true. Part of Ohio history.
Who's come from Ohio?
Presidents? 9 presidents, I think. Look it up. Look it up. You got a phone because I'm going through my rant here.
Okay. I'll do it.
It's the only state that's round on the ends and high in the middle. It is Ohio. That's the riddle. All right? You're not getting that from any other state. You know what's in here? The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's right. We're giving you the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we're in Cleveland, who was nicknamed the Mystique by the Lake.
Yeah, because that has to do with sports. And that's over with, Matt, because the Cleveland Cavaliers have won the National Basketball Association's trophy. Okay? So they're back on top. All that stuff is forgotten. Ohio giving you gifts like Procter & Gamble. I mean, do you want to talk about
Ohio
industry?
Also
do you want to talk about...
can sometimes fucking up an election.
Wait, what are we talking here? Are we talking titans of industry or are we talking STD rates?
Talking about your economy.
Because both are high. Because both are very high.
Your economy is based on LeBron
James.
It
is, but we've got LeBron James and it's a pretty damn good economy.
Okay, presidents from Ohio.
Go ahead. Yep.
Warren G. Harding.
That's right. My dad went to his high school.
William McKinley.
And McKinley, my brother, went to that high school.
Rutherford B. Hayes. That's
my boy.
William Howard Taft.
Taft in it up.
Ulysses S. Grant.
Yep.
James A. Garfield.
Keep going.
The president that was like shot after like 10 seconds.
Yeah, because he was awesome and people were like, another guy from Ohio, get him out of here.
William Henry Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Harrison.
Yeah.
Okay, other than Grant.
Get out of here.
No one that anyone gives a fuck about as far as a president is.
Clearly, because they didn't all get elected in. Come on, man.
But dude, like, this is like, all if right. you were to make a list of like the B team of presidents, this would be the B team of presidents.
Hey, great TV show.
You got no Lincolns.
B team, great TV
show.
You got
no Kennedys. You got no Washingtons.
So what? Only one state can claim that, and that's Massachusetts. Get out of here.
Well, Lincoln was in Kansas, wasn't he?
I don't care.
Okay, you like Ohio.
So Ohio is the shit. It's way underrated.
B-teams for presidents.
Get out of here.
All right. I put that in there specifically because I was hoping you'd
draw it. I know. I could go on and on and on.
I know you could.
That's
why I put it in there. All right, let me pull out.
Sorry for everyone. This podcast is too long for you to handle.
I thought we'd make it one podcast without Ohio. All right. My overrated, underrated.
Oh, I'll give you a dollar, Matt, if you can name the capital of Ohio before it was switched to Columbus.
No, nor do I care.
What? Try Chillicothe, my friend. Okay. Chillicothe, Ohio, former capital. All right, what's up?
Caddyshack.
Ooh, Caddyshack. One of the greatest. Who wrote that one? That's not my handwriting.
I don't know whose handwriting that is.
That might be Ellis.
Caddyshack.
Okay. Which one?
The first one. Come on, there's no two there.
Oh, to me, two's the only one. Delete the first one.
Well, because you're from Ohio.
I'm
just
kidding.
The B team of presidents.
Oh, get out of here.
The B team of Caddyshack.
Get out of here.
Come on. One of the greatest comedies ever made. That's underrated as far as I'm concerned.
Well, here's the... Yes, I agree. But does that make it underrated? Because I think everybody rates it highly.
But I think it's rated...
right where it should be, which is at the top of the food chain.
Yeah, I mean, like...
So that doesn't make it underrated.
I got some fun facts about Caddyshack for you. You want to know them?
No, I want to know... You're telling me this movie, which is clearly rated at the highest of all levels by everybody.
And I don't think that's enough. So it's underrated.
What? What's... the key grips were in a class of their own. Like... What are you talking about?
Here's the one reason I think it's not rated high enough. It's underrated.
Does it have to do with Bill Murray?
It's absolutely to do with Bill
Murray.
Does
it have to do with fucking Gandhi?
No, it's the Dalai Lama.
Or the Dalai Lama, one of those guys, Mother Teresa.
Okay, a few reasons. One,
you know where Gandhi's from, right?
Underrated.
You know where Gandhi's from?
Where?
It's from Ohio. It's from Chillicothe.
Stop. Okay, here's why it's underrated.
Okay.
One, you can't quote the right person quoted in the movie. Therefore, it hasn't fully infiltrated your brain. And if it's one person's brain that hasn't been fully infiltrated, it needs to be everyone's brain.
Okay, all right.
Two,
fair enough. Yeah.
There's only one scene between Chevy Chase and Bill Murray in the movie. Because Chevy Chase and Bill Murray hated each other by the time this movie came out. But Harold Ramis was like, we got to fucking put a scene with you two dudes in it. Harold Ramis, the director, basically arranged for that one scene where they meet up in the, I think it's the golf house.
Sure.
So...
underrated.
Underrated because it needs more Bill Murray, Chevy Chase.
Okay, but not as underrated as the great state of Ohio.
All right, I'll hold my Caddyshack one up next to your Ohio one. We'll walk around the office and everyone...
one of these, Matt, was written in all caps. I don't see Caddyshack in all caps there.
That means nothing.
Because it's the best. All right. Okay. Let's get out of here. Right. Everyone, thank you for being a part of the action. Make sure you tell your friends, download, rate, subscribe, leave us comments, send us emails, podcast@thelaughbutton.com. Follow us on all the socials at The Laugh Button. Go to thelaughbutton.com for the latest in reviews, interviews, news, and notes, and all the nooks and crannies of comedy. We got it covered for you. And you can follow us individually on Twitter. Go ahead and give
I'm
us
at
your...
I am Klein Schmidt.
It's the...
It's my last name, dude. What are you going
at
to say?
I am Klein Schmidt, right?
I am A-I-A-M Klein Schmidt.
Oh, so it's spelled out I-A-M Klein Schmidt.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just making it really hard for everybody.
Dude, here's why. I-A-M is three letters, and Matt is four, and it didn't work.
Oh, like, weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
One letter short.
I'm at Story Mark Says Hi. Follow me on Twitter and merch store.
But don't, because I'll just complain about Ohio.
Dude, it's the best. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, baby.
Maybe you won't complain.
Trent Reznor.
All right. From Ohio.
Did you want to just start name dropping?
No.
I'm from Ohio. That's,
yeah, that's why
counts
it's
for
terrible.
Something. I did leave. I will say
hastily
that.
Hastily made. Dude, yeah. Every joke about Ohio is, you know what you can do with Ohio is pack up your stuff and leave.
But do you know why I left?
Trent Reznor didn't make it big until he left Ohio.
Do you know why I left?
LeBron James left Ohio, came back.
Do you know why I left?
Yeah.
Because it's that much sweeter every time I go home.
Hastily made Cleveland tourism video.